Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Jim Blasingame, he's the cyber king of small business. Search Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. Thanks for being part of my day. And I'm glad you're here, and I know you are too. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. You're welcome to the mayhem and the fun. Joseph Muse is our guest. He's back for more punishment. He's been with us before, and I think we had a pretty good time last time. He's the founder and president of Belmont Partners. He's a reverse merger expert. Ladies and gentlemen, we talked about that last time. You've heard me talk about reverse mergers before. I've had a couple of folks on the show who went public using reverse mergers. And he is the expert in this topic, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, alternatives to going public. Joe Muse, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Jim. Good to be back. I think last time we spoke, I was calling you from Shanghai.
Exactly.
Right. It wasn't that difficult to make the connection. Just 12 hours off, and now this morning I'm in New York City.
Yeah, exactly. And so I know you're getting around. Now tell us what you're doing in New York.
Well, we have a conference that we hold. We've started holding conferences to get some awareness out there of the reverse merger, of going public using shells. And we have a conference tomorrow here at the Grand Hyatt in New York, with Alan Greenspan as the keynote speaker. We've got a packed house of 250 leading experts in the business all gathered around to talk about the state of the industry and how to improve things and so forth. It just really shows how mainstream using a shell to go public to raise money as an entrepreneur has become.
Now, I got to ask you, what process did you go through to get Alan Greenspan to be your speaker? I know he's out there, and I don't mean to be disrespectful at all, because I've been an admirer of his for a long time. But I also know that he's out there right now doing a little bit of legacy building, and so I know he's a lot more available today than he was, say, 2 years ago. But what did you have to do?
Right. Well, we were lucky last year. We did two conferences. We had Governor Tom Ridge from Pennsylvania,
right,
and Harvey and
former,
Harvey
former
Pitt,
Homeland or, Security guy. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And we had former SEC Chairman Harvey Pitt. So
right.
I think we were just fortunate enough that our name had gotten around, and the people in Washington thought that Alan Greenspan would be a good fit for us. And Alan Greenspan, I think, in light of Harvey Pitt doing it and so forth, Tom Ridge.
Right.
Made it really easy for him to come on board, and I almost wonder if he's now more in demand because of all the controversy that's out there.
He probably is, and no, I think you pulled off a coup, and congratulations. But my question is, when he speaks these days, and I haven't heard him give a speech since he's been retired, so to speak. But when he speaks these days, does he actually speak English, or does he use Greenspan speak?
Greenspeak, as they call it. I am not sure. I certainly will be curious to see what happens tomorrow. I know a lot of people who are attending are very eager to ask him questions. We have kind of an open forum where anybody can ask him a question on the state of the economy or interest rates or the housing crisis and so forth. So,
you know, if he'd stayed in any longer, I think Berlitz was going to offer a course on how to speak Greenspan. You know, they were going to have this online course to speak that language. It's like another dialect or something. But that it'll be interesting. I'm really excited to hear after he speaks to you. I'd like for you to come back next time you're back on the show. Tell us, you know, what happened. But now, what are you guys going to be doing at your conference today?
So we're really just going to be talking about the different aspects of the reverse merger process. Of course, our expertise at Belmont Partners is really in providing the right public shell for the company that's going public. So that's what I'm going to be speaking on. You know, there's going to be a series of panels, 8, 10, 12 panels, mm-hmm. talking about the entire process from soup to nuts, and what's happening out of China and other countries and other companies that are listing here in the U.S. And so it's going to cover a lot. Starts at 8 a.m., ends at 7 p.m.
When is your next conference on that, like this?
You know, that's a good question. We're talking about
that
now.
I want to attend that. I want to attend that one.
We'd love to have you. I'm sure it will be in the fall. It's kind of a once every 6 months. It takes a lot of time and effort from our staff to put it together.
Well, give me some notice on that when that one's coming out, because I want to go to that one. I'd like to attend and learn more about this, folks. This is a fascinating alternative. I mean, when you think about going public, as we're going to talk about in a minute when we come up back on the other side of the break, going public is a very, very intimidating and daunting and expensive process, time consuming. Only, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. It's not for the, if you're not ready on many levels, it's not going to work. And this reverse merger thing is a breath of fresh air. It's an opportunity for a lot of people who don't want to go that route. And we're going to talk about that right after these messages with our good friend Joseph Muse. He's the president of Belmont Partners. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Little Eric Clapton coming back at you right there, bringing us back in. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. The first one is where you can find all the things that we do, all the different ways you can listen to our show, including the Time Machine. Don't forget the Time Machine. Take you back in time all the way to 99 when we started collecting our shows and archiving them on demand for you. And also, don't forget you can podcast our shows, too. We got that technology that we're very excited about. And, of course, you can read articles to your little heart's content. You can check out our Brain Trust members. You can check out our blog, which we update every weekday, our newsletter. You can subscribe to it there, and it comes every Sunday afternoon by email. Get you ready for the week ahead. So check all that out. Use it to your advantage. And, of course, askjim.biz, our knowledge base, where you get small business answers now. Joseph Muse is our guest. Joe is the founder and the president of Belmont Partners, LLC. We're talking about reverse mergers. And, you know, it's so interesting, Joe, and I may have mentioned this a little bit the last time. In about the same month last fall, I had one member of my Brain Trust who literally was going public in the traditional way, the classic way of being listed on the NASDAQ anew, you know, getting up there, doing the dog and pony shows all over the place, you know, making the market, getting out there, doing, you know, going all over the country, spending lots and lots of money, and they went public and they launched at, you know, 16 or 17, they ran up to about 28, and now they're back a little bit down below that, but they're trading every day at, you know, in 18, 19, 20 bucks a share. I had another friend who went reverse merger, much smaller company, went reverse merger, and they're trading too, but it's a lot lower number. Now, you know, both of them believe they did the right thing for their own company, but the reverse merger cost a lot less, happened a lot quicker, but the immediate opportunity hasn't been there for that company like it was for the other company. Can you help us sort those two scenarios out?
Well, sure. I mean, the IPO process, I think, is still a great process in this country. It does take a long time. It is expensive. But at the end of the day, you get the money that you're looking for, and you get the backing in the market where your stock trades every day, and you have access to additional capital. Part of the problem is, even while it's not a perfect process, part of the problem is that process is only available to companies of a certain size.
Right.
Right. Companies that have at least a market value of $150 or $200 million. And so a lot of companies out there doing $40 million in revenue, $50 million
or
in
less.
Revenue, growing or less, and they're great business models, great businesses in general. They don't even have a choice of the reverse merger process or the, mm-hmm. the traditional IPO process.
Especially with Sarbanes-Oxley is another complication that's in the middle of all that, isn't it?
You know, it is and it isn't. I think Sarbanes-Oxley definitely adds to the cost of the public company, of the reverse merger process. But
for the smaller companies, am I correct that until you actually get to a certain size, there are certain parts of Sarbanes-Oxley you don't have to comply with?
That's correct, and there are a number of over-the-counter companies that that don't comply with
that. That was one of the advantages to my friend who went reverse merger, is he said we'll be able to grow and get some things under our belt without going this route, without having to do some of the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance.
Right. Kind of the idea of kind of growing into the public shell or the public environment, and that I completely understand. A lot of companies need to still focus on growing their business, but the other side of it is when they do become Sarbanes-Oxley compliant, the investors like the Goldman Sachs and the John Hancocks, a lot of those large investors are now coming into that over-the-counter space and investing in those deals because they are Sarbanes-Oxley compliant. So we tell clients that if you can become compliant with Sarbanes-Oxley, you're going to find the return tenfold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that exactly. But you know, it really upsets me, though. I mean, obviously, we got Sarbanes-Oxley. There's not anything we can do about it. We'll probably always have it. But that is one thing that has happened that I believe has been a very, very negative impact, has had a very negative impact, and not really a beneficial one on the U.S. market. What do you think, Joe?
Well, there certainly were a few years, I think back probably 2005, 2006, right after Sarbanes-Oxley was put in place, that a number of clients were passing on listing here in the U.S., and they were listing in London and at other
right.
places where Sarbanes-Oxley didn't apply. And, you know, I'm sure we'd love to have those companies back here. It's not perfect. I think long term, it was probably a step in the right direction, but again, not perfect. And I know they're looking at making some adjustments to it.
Right.
It's you know, going back to your example of the IPO versus the reverse merger process. You know, if I'm running a company that I know works, that I know is profitable, that I know if I just had some additional capital, I could take it to the next level. I can't even access the IPO process these days. I mean, it's shut off to 99% of the businesses out there.
Right. Well, but the reverse merger, folks. Joe, give us the quick tour on how that works.
Sure. So the idea is that there's, of course, your private company that's doing well, needs to grow, needs capital, and then there's out there in the world is a public company that didn't work. It was a company in 1995 that was in the manufacturing business or in the dot-com business in 1998.
Right.
Now, you know, 10 years later, that public company is still out there. It still has a ticker symbol.
People are still holding shares.
That's right. Still has a diverse shareholder base, a lot of times thousands of shareholders, and it's empty. There's no operations in there.
Yeah.
And
hold on that thought, Joe. Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back. Joe's going to finish that story, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this right after these messages. It's 10 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joe Muse is our guest. Until I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joseph Muse, the president and the founder of Belmont Partners, and that's BelmontPartners.net, right, Joe?
That's correct.
And Joe's in New York City doing an outstanding conference today on the Alternative Public Strategies conference, he calls it, which is all about the reverse merger process. One of the things a reverse merger typically does, Joe, is it doesn't raise as much capital as an IPO, right? Whereas an IPO might raise maybe $100 million or $50 million or something like that. A reverse merger might raise $4 or $5 million or something like that initially, right?
Right. You know, there are a number of reverse mergers that don't actually raise any money.
Yeah.
And that's just what would be called a standard reverse merger. And then there's what's kind of been classified as an APO, not an IPO. And the APO is where the money comes in simultaneous to going public. Hmm. And we're seeing a lot of those. And generally speaking, those
I'm
are
confused.
Raising...
I'm confused about that. Tell us, explain that a little bit more.
So the reverse merger in and of itself is just the process of merging into the public company.
Right.
Doesn't mean you're going to get a dollar from doing it. It just means now you're public, and then you can go raise money.
Right.
The industry has kind of termed the simultaneous going public and putting money in the company from investors as an APO, or alternative public offering. And the APO process has become very popular over the last couple of years, and they're done every week in this country, where companies are raising 15, 20, sometimes probably as high as $35 or $40 million from going into a shell and getting money at the same time.
And where does that money come from in an APO?
That money comes from institutional investors, large investment funds. It comes from names.
By doing the reverse merger, it makes that company more attractive. It basically ensures that there is an exit strategy one day for a future market for those shares, whereas they might not have invested into the private company because there might not have been a future market for those shares.
They probably never would have invested in it as a private company, right?
Because they're not going to put their money in unless they know there's an exit strategy.
That's right.
So folks, basically a reverse merger, quickly to remind you, you've got a shell company that has no business model. You got a private company that has a growing and a promising business model with significant sales, several million dollars, is acquired by the shell company. But when the acquisition happens, the private company basically takes over the ownership and the management of they maintain the business model of this private company becomes the business model of the shell company, and the incoming private company runs the whole thing. Right, Joe?
That's exactly right.
English type of thing.
That's exactly right. You've gone from private to public, and you've now inherited a ticker symbol, the ability to have your stock trade, and you've inherited a lot of very, very, very small shareholders in your company that are legacy from the old public company.
But there are also some other legacies that you got to be that you can inherit that you don't want, right, Joe?
Sure. I mean,
there's baggage.
Right. Listen, there certainly can be baggage if you don't pick the right public company
or
partner in the process,
or clean up the one that you got.
That's right.
Before
you
go public.
That's right.
And even if a company has got some baggage, there are some steps that can be taken to get those things clean, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it happens all the time. And frankly, think of any business owner, or think of any business operation. A lot of them, you know, there's baggage. There's something here, something there. And it just takes a little effort to clean them up. But, you know, I try to keep it simple myself. And it's the simple idea that, you know, if you're an investor and you're listening to this radio show, and you have the option of putting a dollar into a private company and a dollar into a public company, I think 99.9% of the time you're always going to put your dollar into the public
company. Because there is supposedly a market for those shares, at least somewhere you can divest yourself at some point. Hey Joe, good luck on your conference today.
Thanks, Joe.
When the next one comes up, and I'd like to know more about that. And thank you for being here and providing us with this outstanding information.
You got it. Thank you, Jim. Talk
folks,
to you
if you want to know more about this, go to belmontpartners.net, and you can find Joe's website and all the things that they do there and learn a lot more about that. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post on our behalf, oftentimes in harm's way. God bless you. God be with you. We are all very proud of you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.